Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognize, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. So this week, I wanted to record an episode with a psychologist who might provide some honest and comforting words to us during this bizarre time.
You know, when people say, I really want to stay positive, or I want to, you know, like at the end of the day, like our days are just full of little moments. And if, you know, it's like, it's not necessarily about making the best of each moment. Sometimes you just don't bloody feel like making the best of a particular moment, or you're angry or you're sad, or it's really hard at that time. And those are the moments, I suppose, it's about where it's about kind of, you know, checking in with yourself and showing yourself compassion in those moments.
Dr. Mally Coyne is a clinical psychologist, author and psychology lecturer. She also sits on the Mental Health Advisory Panel for the Lust for Life charity, and she released her book, Love In, Love Out, A Compassionate Approach to Parenting Your Anxious Child, this summer. We met for the first time last September, and I've wanted to record a conversation with her for ages. She lives in Galway with her husband, Pete, and their two daughters, Jessica, who's 9, and Amy, who's 7. On Tuesday, we sat down to have a conversation, and we covered a lot during the chat. So instead of releasing one very long episode, I've split it. This is the first part, and in the second, coming next week, we look at questions that were sent in by listeners. So we're 6 months into life with COVID-19 in Ireland. There was a degree of relaxation of restrictions during the summer, but we're now into the second wave of measures, with Dublin and Donegal currently on level 3 of the government's 5-level living with COVID plan to tackle the virus over the next 6 months. There's a lot of stress and there's a lot of uncertainty to be felt amongst people, myself included. So I hope this conversation can help you realise that whatever you're feeling is okay and that you're not on your own. Here it is.
We had the pandemic, which began for us, I suppose, in Ireland in March. And then we had the restrictions, and all of that was really difficult to deal with at the time. For different people, they had their own unique experiences, but there was a general sense in Ireland and in the world of, oh my God, we can't believe this has happened and our lives have completely changed. And then, as you said, for the summer then, you know, it was, you know, I mean, I'm a parent, I have two kids, you know, having the kids at home the whole time, you really kind of felt that they were, that this was very different, and that people, lots of people out there, you know, were working from home and still are working from home, and just life as they knew it completely changed, and a lot of worries about health. And I suppose we're all, humans are very anxious by our own nature. We all have a brain that's focused towards threat, and we need to be like that because that's how we survive as humans. That's how we have survived all these years. But the thing is, the threat, you know, what's happened with COVID is that it's almost like COVID has become, and all of its repercussions have become like the predator. And for people who are more, maybe more prone to anxiety, or for people who've had a particularly difficult time, you know, certain segments of society or individuals who've really had a hard time, it's been incredibly difficult for many. And I think, you know, what struck me about what you said there was, you know, we had a summer then, and I think we all kind of thought, okay, you know, once the kids go back to school, that'll kind of signal a bit of normality. And once, you know, the numbers were really low, like July, August, you know, like, you know, things were starting to look up. Fair enough, we still couldn't have like our events that we liked having or whatever, but we were kind of looking towards going out again, going to restaurants and, you know, maybe not in the same way, but we were kind of getting used to this new normal or whatever people say. Some people just don't even like saying new normal because they can't accept this as being normal. The new abnormal, somebody else said to me. But I think now I totally feel what you're saying, because you've got these new restrictions in Dublin, and every time I watch the news, or, you know, there's another county that has been added to the list of, you know, counties that we're worried about. And I think, you know, coming into the winter, the darker nights, the colder weather, the times where we get sick anyway, there is more worry and uncertainty now, because it's like our patience has almost run out. We felt we had done it. And then to kind of almost get to that point where you felt you had, you know, overcome this, and now here we are again, it's really difficult for the human psyche. This is our brain. So our brain is, like, I suppose the beauty of human beings is that we have great imaginations. We have this prefrontal cortex, which is the reasoning part of your brain, that can imagine things. That's the basis of our creativity and the basis of being able to problem solve. But also it's the basis of our anxiety, and we can imagine the future, whereas other species can't imagine the future like we can. So there is, you know, Liz Gilbert in that podcast I was speaking to you about, but what she kind of talked about, like how there is a paradox. We have this threat-focused brain that really looks into the future, and that is very normal for us to do. But yet humans, I think sometimes we forget that we're incredibly adaptable as well. Like, who knew all these months ago, if you had said to us even this time last year, oh, you're going to be through, you know, even at the beginning of the year, like 2020 is just going to be the craziest year of your lives. If even older people can say that now, they have never lived what we are currently living. So I think, you know, it's important to also think about how resilient we are as a species, how you have come from a line of, you know, resilient people. That's how you've come to be on this planet right now, living. And that's not, though, to discount how you're currently feeling. And it's very normal to feel, you know, to look into the future, to want to plan. We all like planning. It makes us feel like we have a sense of control. But I think an important thing that this has all taught us is that we don't really have control over the outer world. We might have a little bit of control over the things we do every day, which we can talk about. But in terms of the outside world, when you were driving here this morning, when I was driving here this morning, we didn't really have control over what might happen to us. You know, we're constantly taking risks, and that's a normal thing. So I think,
and we forget that, don't we? We forget that we actually can't control everything. Mm. And it depends on the personality type, I suppose, as well. And I think the version of me that existed maybe 10 years ago or further back probably would have liked to have felt a sense of control more. And I think life has taught me that you got to surrender to things, because we just don't know. We just don't know what's going to happen. Sometimes life comes at you thick and fast, and you're forced to stop. And sometimes that stopping is not just stopping or taking a breath. Sometimes you have to allow yourself to fall down and crumble. And that sounds dramatic. I know that. But sometimes, you know, the trying to be brave and stoic and I'm going to get through this, I'm going to be okay. Sometimes I feel, from personal experience, that can be more damaging to try and convince yourself and think yourself into positivity. That sometimes what you need to do is allow yourself to go, whoa, this is full on now for me. And the reason I'm saying this is, I suppose, as you have said, we're all having our own unique experiences of this. Some people have, and we know because we've got a flood of messages on Instagram, people wanting your opinion on different things. A lot of people are grieving, either grieving people who've passed away during this time, they haven't had the regular funeral, or people who are grieving the life that they had before COVID and how things have changed depending on the work situation, relationships, family dynamics, all of that. And sometimes it can be, it can feel, and the word was used a lot, unbearable or too much. And I worry for that, for those people, because, you know, I've been that soldier where it's just felt like too bloody much for one person to process and take on. And I think we need to watch out for people who are feeling that way, because isolation can sometimes just make it, I suppose, feel all the more heavy and dark. I've kind of gone down a rabbit hole because I'm kind of tapping into a me that I'm remembering right now. And I didn't mean to do that. But I'm just sensing that there's a lot of emotion going on. There's also a lot of joy. There's a lot of positive experiences through this time. So to cover it all in one podcast is quite a big ask. But I do think honouring wherever we're at is an important step, isn't it? Acceptance.
Yeah, I mean, that's really important. Whatever experience you're having right now, it's okay.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's okay, you know. And I think, you know, an important point there, Sheila, is that, you know, sometimes what can make a feeling worse is to feel shamed, or to feel ashamed of having that feeling. Like, I shouldn't be feeling good right now. There's people dying, or there's people in much worse situations than me. I shouldn't be feeling that. Or I shouldn't be feeling so anxious. I should be able to send my child to school right now, but I'm just crippled with anxiety. Or I should be kind of a bit better off by now. Somebody, you know, a loved one died a few months ago, and I should be a little bit better off now, or other people think I should. And it's like the second should creeps in, that's like where shame creeps in, and that actually makes the suffering even worse. And like, suffering is part of life. And I think, you know, we're just all experiencing COVID and everything in a different way. And that's okay. And yeah. And I agree with you there. Sometimes you do have to fall apart. You know, it's like a process before you can kind of, you know, see the light as such, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's just very different for everyone. And I think if you... mindfulness, I suppose, and that's where I'm really interested in compassion and compassion-focused therapy. And the three elements of that are mindfulness is all about paying attention to how you feel in the moment and without kind of judgment. Mm. So, you know, not judging, OK, well, I'm feeling like crap right now, or this is really hard. Or, you know, like, it's just literally paying attention to it.
Observing it.
And like, yeah, observing it even adds that bit of distance, because you're like, this, or even naming it, like, I'm feeling ashamed, I'm feeling angry, I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling joyful, I'm feeling excited.
It's important to say the feeling, isn't it? My understanding of it is that sometimes when somebody says, I'm angry, you're better off saying, I'm feeling anger, I'm feeling angry. So yeah, you're that word in itself, as you said, it is that step back. So you're not actually labeling yourself as an angry person, but you're recognizing that it's a feeling, and feelings come and go.
Yeah. And I think that's the whole thing. I mean, the compassion, it comes from the Eastern traditions, which I think we can learn so much from.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, you know, it's this idea of it's okay, like, this is really hard for me right now. So there's a thing called a self-compassion break. You can actually just Google it online. Kristen Neff does a great one, you know, audio versions of like 3 minutes or whatever. And it's basically this idea of mindfulness, which is, you know, I'm feeling like this. You think of something that's mildly distressing for you, but not really distressing, like just mildly.
Okay.
And then you kind of close your eyes and you think of, like, you know, I'm feeling like this, and this is hard for me right now. This is hard. And then common humanity comes in. And common humanity is this idea that suffering gets worse if we feel alone in that suffering. And very often we do feel alone in suffering. We feel like, oh my God, like, that person has it so much better than me, or I can't share that because they won't understand. And I think one thing COVID has really kind of proven to us, or shown us, is that we are all in this world community community of humans, we're all in this together. Like, you know, if you look at the news at different countries, it's like different permutations. But really, there's human beings on each of those, in each of those countries that are going through similar things. And it's not to discount how you're feeling right now, but it's just to say, it's okay, I'm not alone right now. So part of that self-compassion break is, this is hard for me right now. This is how I'm feeling, which is mindfulness, then common humanity. I'm not alone. This is what it feels like to be sad as a human, or this is what it feels like to feel insurmountable grief, you know, even like that. And then the last one is kindness and self-kindness. And it's like, basically, you can do this, you can put your hand over your heart or give yourself a hug, and all of that releases this lovely cuddle oxytocin hormone. And basically saying, because I'm suffering, may I be kind to myself in this moment, you know, may I be kind. And a lot of people struggle with that, because maybe, you know, you learn how to self-soothe from the time you're very young. And that's from experiences of being soothed by your caregiver, your parent. And sometimes that can be difficult for people as they grow older. So sometimes when a client comes into me, I'll just say to them, if your best friend came to you right now and said they were, you know, going through something, you know, what you're going through, exactly what you're going through, how would you react to them? And sometimes it can be easier to say, what would you say? How would you be kind to your best friend? And then to show yourself that kindness. So yes. I think compassion has this, you know, and that's why, I mean, like, that's why I kind of included it in my book. It's just, it has the power to kind of to increase your soothing system, because we have these three circles. One is threat, and one is soothing, and one is drive. And it has the power to really increase your soothing system so that you're able to then calm down the anxiety and the feelings of threat. So it's all about doing things that are good for you, you know, connecting with other people, doing things that universally make humans feel good, but it can be sometimes hard to do that for ourselves.
I find sometimes as well, your younger self and looking at a photo of yourself as a kid and how you'd speak to yourself, like how you speak to a kid. And what you've touched on there has already come up in some previous podcast episodes. We did one with Annie Lavin, who's a relationship expert, and she was talking about the power of self-soothing and actually giving yourself a hug as well was something that came up. It's so important because people are experiencing, and again, it came up in the questions, loneliness. Be it living fully on their own, are people who find themselves in relationships that are not maybe fulfilling and they're feeling loneliness in that environment. We got to learn to be our own rescuer, don't we?
In a way, yeah. And in a way we do, yeah. And it's about kind of minding our little selves. And that's a lovely concept. I absolutely love that. And we do, but we're also very social beings. And I think what's been really hard about the last few months is that usually, you know, when humans deal with threat, and is that we usually try to kind of assemble the troops around us to help us. And it's been harder. Like even this morning when we met, we couldn't even give each other a hug like we would have a few months ago. And, you know, it's really hard. Like I've heard that from parents out there, from lots of people out there, just that, you know, not being able to hug grandparents anymore, not being able to just and then everybody having a different view of the sense of threat. Like some people are comfortable, you know, seeing each other. Some people are not, you know, like there's so many different minefields, even that it's you know, it's harder because we can't rely on it's harder for people who are lonely because, you know, to reach out. Some people are not into doing online reaching out or on the phone or that kind of thing. So I think a few months ago, there was this big mobilization when COVID first happened of trying to, you know, really help people out there and, you know, your elderly neighbor and people who are struggling. And I suppose I would appeal to people that, you know, what can really help as well with your own feelings is to just have that little bit of reaching out. Because I think what we're missing out on as well is acquaintance smiling and little conversations that we used to have in Ireland. Yeah. I think that's lovely about Ireland. I'm half Dutch, so I really noticed that in Ireland. You know, the little chat with somebody at a bus stop or in a shop or something. You know, just the tiny thing that can just give you that bit of a boost. And we're just not having that as much anymore.
You know, stuff that was coming up months ago that is still relevant now, if not more relevant now, is how will this psychologically impact us because I think there's no doubt about it. I mean, I recorded a podcast early April and it was just me chatting in the wardrobe at home. And I was kind of saying at the time, I think it's inevitable that this time is going to change us. But I think at the time we didn't know what the next 6 months, next year is going to hold. We still don't, obviously. But I think it's already changing us, is it?
Yeah, but like humans and the world are used to, are constantly evolving and changing anyway. Do you know what I mean? So yes,
it's not all bad, basically.
It's not all bad. Before I wrote the book, I was talking about the perfect storm, about why we were so anxious back in the day. That feels like, you know, pre-2020. And I was talking about like the combination of our threat-focused brain, which is always on, with the crazy kind of technological world we live in, which isn't a bad thing to have technology. Of course, there's huge benefits, you know, to us being able to do this, for instance, today and that. But it's just this kind of always on culture of, you know, I suppose it's phones, constant stream of news coming in the whole time. This kind of focus on the results as opposed to the process. There was an awful lot, I suppose, going on. And I really feel like I've heard it said as well that it's almost like COVID and what happened maybe helped us to recalibrate a little bit. And that's not to say for people who are really struggling out there, you know, like that might not be your experience. But for other people, you know, I've asked the question when I was doing my Facebook Lives during the lockdown with the Lust for Life. You know, what parts of normal are worth rushing back to?
Yeah.
And I even like, you know, there was a father who brought his kid to like 3 birthday parties on a Saturday and started, you know, before lockdown and kind of thought like, was that really necessary? So maybe, hopefully, it might have given us a bit of time to reflect. So if you kind of think, well, what's the long term impact of this? I don't know what the long term impact will be, but I think humans have always struggled. And I really hope that maybe there might be a little bit of learning and slowing down from all of this, where we kind of realize, like I've realized that I needed so much less and so did my kids. Like I just, even just little moments of us cycling around within our 2K radius and kind of eating it, like being so like grateful to get an ice cream from the shop and sit down and the weather was good. And it's like, this is life. This is okay. And I know that's not the situation for everyone. So my hands are around you if it's not your experience. But for some people, and it might have been that there were moments in between your grief and your sadness and what you were going through, that there might have been moments of light for you too.
You're so, you know, you talk about compassion, but you're such a compassionate person and it just pours out of you, because that's the thing about this is, I think having this conversation, some people will find this really triggering, and all we can do is have an honest, open conversation, all the while knowing that everybody's experience of it is their own. And our intention is not to cause further pain into anyone's own world right now with our words, but also acknowledging the realness of it. And what you've hit on there is something you said earlier on. And when you spoke about it, I felt it when you spoke about shame. And you're right, because this is something that we experienced in our family unit as well. Myself, my partner and our little boy who's 3. In the early part of lockdown, we were almost afraid to verbalise our joy, because for us, we will look back on that period with bizarrely huge fondness, because we were in our little bubble. Like you, we'd get out on our bikes, we'd, you know, cycle to the Duckies, we'd eat our banana bread, and we were the textbook, like, But we were just going, this is blissful. This is actually, we are having the most precious time with our little man, and we were so fortunate to have that. We know it's not everybody's situation, but I was almost a little bit afraid to admit that to people for fear that I can't be seen to express joy in this time of difficulty, uncertainty. And don't get me wrong, like my career has massively been impacted.
Yeah.
My finances have been massively impacted during this time. So it hasn't been a bed of roses for me. But I was able to focus on the stuff that was good. It's not always that way either, though. So I think, is it true that we're going through different phases? So early doors, I felt a lot of fear, anxiety. Then I went into kind of really embracing gratitude and present moment awareness and loving that. And then it was kind of like, what's to be learned here? What's the lesson? But are we entering back into a fear zone again? Or is it completely different for all of us? Do we all have our own process with it?
I think there are phases, general phases. Like, you have felt from outside, from people around you, that there was another kind of period of uncertainty or feeling uncertain. And I felt that a few weeks ago, and that's why I did a Facebook Live. I hadn't done one in months, and I redid one, like, I think 2 weeks ago, because I really, there was a lot of parents who just had kids back in school, and then there was this whole idea of, if my child has a sniffle, does that mean they have to stay home? You know, what if schools close again? And all of that was kind of resurfacing for people in the first few weeks after going back to school. And I think we also experience things then individually as well. So we experience things collectively, and then we experience things individually. But, like, I think I hear what you're saying. You had beautiful moments, and I kind of think, you know, when people say, I really want to stay positive, or I want to, you know, like, at the end of the day, like, our days are just full of little moments. And if, you know, it's like, it's not necessarily about.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Making the best of each moment. Sometimes you just don't bloody feel like making the best of a particular moment, or you're angry, or you're sad, or it's really hard at that time. And those are the moments, I suppose, it's about where it's about kind of, you know, checking in with yourself and showing yourself compassion in those moments. But it's okay to have a roller coaster of emotions, because that's just the way we are as human beings. And I think if we try to say, OK, I'm going to be positive here, I'm going to have a good attitude, I'm going to be grateful every day, I'm going to, you know, do this, that and the other. I mean, I have lots of tools I could talk to you about, Sheila. And, you know, But at the end of the day, and I remember doing a documentary a few years ago, it was called Stressed. It was on RTE1, and I was working with this participant. His name is Jonathan. He's in my book. And he was really stressed because he wanted more time with family, but he was running two businesses. But he also had an incredible drive, and that was a fear-based drive. So it was kind of like, if I don't get to be, you know, make this much money, then I'm no one. You know, if I don't whatever, then, and that all came from early kind of history. And this was this was documented in the documentary, so it's okay for me to say it. But, and then I was like, oh my God, like, how the heck am I going to do this on telly? Like, people watching me, you know, how am I going to, like, and I bought this, like, relaxation and stress workbook. And I was like, shit, like, how am I going to actually, like, show that I can, not even show, but, like, how can I help this guy, right? And it was around that time that I learned about compassion-focused therapy. And, like, you know, it stripped away all of that. And it was no longer about the tools, even though the tools are important and there's little tools we can talk about that might be able to help in terms of looking at worries you can control and ones you can't, and writing lists and all that kind of stuff. But it was more like, you know, what was important for me to do with him was to kind of go a little bit further back and to look at where his idea of I'm not good enough came from, you know. And many of us walk around the planet thinking we're not good enough. And it comes from like a deep part within ourselves. And that's what makes it hard. You can say, do this for yourself, do that for, you know, self-care and blah, blah, blah. But if you don't, if you find that really difficult to do for yourself, there's something deeper inside. And that you may need help with, you know, with a professional, or may need to talk to somebody you trust about that. But I suppose for him, even though the TV producers wanted really visual things for us to do, like jumping off diving boards and things like that, you know, it was like a framework where we looked at trying to increase his soothing circle and trying to do things where he would, like, I remember him saying, like, literally he'd be, I'd have a meeting in Dublin and he'd leave Galway and literally he would leave himself like an hour and a half to drive. And then he would like boot it down the motorway. Like, think of your like adrenaline levels and your stress. He would get to the hotel 10 minutes late, no time for a toilet, no time to get a coffee, no time for anything, land in the meeting and just like, blah, 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 you know. And then compare that to like him reflecting on that and then kind of going, okay, you know, the next time he did it, he gave himself plenty of time to go. He was able to stop and then actually get to Dublin and actually have time to like center himself and to just be present, even to wait in a car park for a while. Oh my God, like humans are afraid to like wait. And then when we have to wait, we get our mobile phones. And I'm not judging anyone because I do the same thing. But it's like, it just helped him to realize that it was only feeding his threat system to leave late for a meeting and to like boot it down the motorway. So, you know, in order to soothe him, it was about taking a bit more time and having more time with the family and switching off at 6 o'clock and not always answering his phone and literally switching it off. And I've noticed you do that as well on social media. You might kind of say, I didn't take my phone out, you know, and that I'm really grateful that I didn't. And kind of just making those little choices for yourself. I think the whole thing of from Liz Gilbert, I also heard that we are stewards of our senses. So that means that whatever you take in every day, you have choices around that. So if you choose to watch Sky News every hour on the hour, then that's your choice.
Yeah.
But is that going to be good in terms of feeding your soothing circle? No, it won't. It'll feed your threat circle. So,
and the brain believes whatever it hears
totally.
Or sees. So let's get a bit more, at least control that.
Yeah.
We can control that.
We can control that. We can.
While we're listening to what
we can.
We're watching. Yeah.
And reducing that down and maybe kind of going, I'm not saying like live in the dark, but just maybe choose one reliable source of information and then just go with that to inform yourself and then try to switch it off if you can. It's like about kind of taking a step back and going, what's the next best thing for me right now? And it might just be the next best thing for me right now is to get into the shower because I know it'll make me feel better, or to go for a walk, or to pick up the phone, or whatever it is.
Find
the next best. Yeah, what's your potion? I like that. You know, what's your potion? Find your thing. But it doesn't have to be something huge.
It's funny, on the way in, I was listening to News Talk and Pat Kenny was talking about meditation. And how he doesn't get it at all, and how he tried transcendental meditation, and
I love
effectively, the vibe was he thought it was all nonsense, and he doesn't do it. I was kind of smiling along listening to it because the next item on the following radio show was that they were going to discuss this rise in popularity of meditation. It's
okay.
Become like the kind of go-to thing, and everybody is talking about it. Not everybody, but a lot of people are talking about it in one way or another, saying that they do it or they'd like to do it or whatever. And there is an interest now. Towards what is this about and how can I help? And we've discussed it before with other people on this podcast. And I suppose I wanted to bring it up because I like it. It's helped me.
Mm.
It's something I'm into. But I would never, you know, because I do think sometimes there is there's this elitism that comes, I meditate, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And Dermot Whelan spoke about this really well in the chat we had good while back now, that oftentimes it's not until we hit a crisis that we go, okay, and now I need to meditate.
Yeah, yeah.
But like all things, if you start small and you just do small little steps, because a lot of people want to get into it and then don't know how and it's too much and da, da, da. But it's just little tiny steps, be it meditation or whatever it is, as you said, find your thing, find your potion. Love that. And you know, build on it and it'll work. But for me, it's always the simple stuff when you're in that kind of survival mode, the fight or flight kind of thing, that it's like, okay, am I breathing? Am I breathing deeply? Because I often find that I'm always up in my, not even my chest, it's in my throat. like I'm really that shallow breathing. So it's about kind of that simple stuff, isn't it? And
but
that it doesn't need to be big. Yeah.
Yeah. Even saying that to yourself, you're immediately like, if you're in that fight or flight and you're saying, am I breathing deeply or how am I breathing? You're instantly regulating yourself, if you know what I mean, because you're asking yourself that question. And like Eddie Murphy had a good thing to say during one of the Facebook Lives. He kind of said that some people are into like meditating or kind of doing like, you know, in a kind of a sitting down version, and other people are more into like more physical versions.
Yeah,
like
dynamic.
Like dynamic. Yeah. I don't have the exact words.
No, not at all. But yeah, I love it.
Yeah. So I feel like Tai Chi really appeals to me. I've never done it, but even my husband showed me one move and I was like, God, I really like that. And I'm really into like, now that I get the bike out, even on my own, and I just go for really fast, dangerous cycles. Don't tell anybody, but I really do. Like I like boot it down a hill and it makes me feel great. And I'm not thinking, so that's my form of meditation in a way. It's my form of just not thinking about anything. It's activity for me because I've been sitting down a lot of the day. But Brian Penny is a guy that wrote a book on his own kind of struggles with heroin addiction and how he came out of it. And he talks about habit stacking, which I really liked. And it's this idea of, you know, rather than saying, oh, I need to try something new and I need to like meditate every day and I need to make time and all that. It's about like literally doing what you do anyway, but just adding something to it. So if you brush your teeth anyway, every day, or have a shower, you know, every time you brush your teeth, you might think of, rather than look at your phone, because some of us do, you might think of, I'm going to name three things that I'm grateful for. You know, I'm grateful that I woke up this morning. I'm grateful I had a little hug with somebody. I'm grateful that I am going somewhere. I was really grateful to be coming here today. I'm grateful that the sun is shining, you know, and that's like you've stacked it on to brushing your teeth. And then in the shower, it could be, you know, it could be about like feeling the water on your skin and, you know, is it hot? Is it cold? How is this for you? And just, I suppose, being more present in the moment. And so it's about maybe just finding little moments, because I feel like if people think, oh, I have to start this practice now, that they're just going to berate themselves for not doing it right. And lots of meditators say they actually have that feeling a lot as well.
Yeah. And you're right. Sometimes it is just a simple stuff of like, well, what can I see? Where I am right now? What can I see? What can I hear?
Exactly.
What can I taste? What can I sense? So bringing all the senses in, that is it. Mm. Like that is a great practice to do, that present moment awareness. So a lot of people listening might be thinking, that's all well and good. I've heard all of this before. It all sounds brilliant, but I just don't get it. Do you know what I mean? I don't get it. Or I've tried, but it's not for me, or it's not working. My tuppence worth is, like all things, it takes time, doesn't it? Like retraining habits are adding in new, as you said, those building blocks or new elements or whatever it is, or creating new routines. It's not going to happen overnight. So go easy.
Absolutely. Go easy. And also kind of maybe, you know, if you feel like there's a lot of barriers there, to maybe look at what those barriers are. Because sometimes people, you know, they might kind of sabotage themselves and say, I'm going to do like these five new things tomorrow. And then they don't do them. And then they feel like crap. But really, that's kind of like a self-sabotage, because it was impossible for you to do those five things. And so therefore, it doesn't mean you're a crap person that you didn't do them, you know. So it's if you have this negative voice inside your head. And by the way, we all have a negative voice inside our heads. It's not about, I remember thinking it was all about like telling that negative voice, go away and F off or whatever. But actually, it's more about when it comes, because it always comes, about just turning the dial, the volume down on it a little bit, and just trying to turn up the volume on something a little bit kinder. Like, I didn't do what I was setting out to do today, but that's okay, because this other thing came up and I'm having a hard day. I'm not feeling great, actually. How am I feeling? You know, I'm not, you know, and that's not to say you can't plan to do things. And like they do say, like during the COVID crisis, it is, you know, that this girl wrote this really article, good article, Susie Lodola, on, do you often feel overwhelmed by worry? And she kind of had this worry tree about talking about like, what are worries? Like apparently 80% of our worries are not, you know, are kind of more hypothetical than real worries, things we can actually do something about. And then she talks about every day trying to have a balance of doing something that you achieve. And I'm not talking about major achievements. It could literally be, I'm going to clean this small thing here over here, or I'm going to, you know, I've been, but not something massive, you know, but something you achieve, even going for a walk or whatever, doing your bit of work, feeling that sense of achievement. We all kind of need that. And then having also connection with other people is really important in whatever way you can. And then having a sense of pleasure, doing the crap things that you'd never want people to see you. You know, like I watch Say Yes to the Dress on repeat. My husband keeps saying, you're married, you got your dress. And I'm like, well, I'll be getting another dress if you go on like this.
Actually, I had that not so long ago as well, where himself was away for a night.
Yeah.
And I watched How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing.
Was it?
It was amazing.
I was like, crap with a man.
And I sent him a screen grab and he was like, I'm so glad. Well, see, the thing is, if he was there, I'd never get to watch it.
Totally.
This is heaven.
I know.
I'm so ridiculous. Anyway, I love it.
So you need those moments of ridiculous as well. You know, those ridiculous things.
Ridiculous, play, fun.
Yeah.
It's important. I mean, even you describing yourself flying down the hill on the bike, I was almost imagining you as a girl.
Really?
Is it because, like, did you like cycling as a kid? The reason I say that is oftentimes I think the stuff that we like as adults is might have been stuff that we enjoyed when we were kids.
Yeah.
But sometimes we forget the stuff that gave us a thrill when we were younger.
Yeah. And they do say, actually, like in Liz Gilbert, again, in that podcast, which is like...
Mention the podcast
in
case
during
people...
It's a TED podcast, right? And it was in April. I can share the link with you on your Instagram. But it's basically, you know, something to do with dealing with your overwhelm. Here's what to do with it or something like that. It was recorded in April. And it was like on Facebook, and then they made it into a podcast. But basically what she said was, if you've been an anxious child in any way, that you almost, you know, anxious children sometimes soothe themselves by using play or creativity or, you know, fast movement. And I certainly did do that, I think.
Okay.
And that if you're thinking now, what is my potion? Maybe go back to when you were 10. Before you knew how to soothe yourself in other ways, using maybe alcohol or, I don't know, like shopping or whatever things that mightn't be as healthy for you, smoking, whatever it is, that you would kind of go back to when you were that age and what you actually enjoyed. So I don't know, the cycling, I'm half Dutch, so I guess I always...
You lived,
like,
on a bike.
Yeah, I guess so. But for me, it's feeling the air. For me, like... I live in an estate where there's, you know, we can go for walks, which I'm so grateful for. And just to kind of see nature and to feel the air. And to, even a few weeks ago, I was saying to my friend, like, finally, I feel the season of autumn and the kids are back in school. And this is how it's meant to be, if you know what I mean. Because the whole world, like even during COVID, we're still in COVID, during the lockdown, I mean, it was great weather. And it just felt like, what the heck is going on, like, with Ireland, seriously? And then the summer was pretty crap. And then, but now the leaves are starting to fall off and the kids are in school. Hopefully your kids are in school. But, you know... But then we're also thinking to, like, what about, can they trick or treat, and what's going to, you know, can we book Santa for Christmas and all these kind of... I'm not even going to go there.
I wanted to ask you about that because I think what's on a lot of people's minds right now is maybe not even necessarily Halloween. They're kind of looking ahead to Christmas 2020. What is that going to look like?
Yeah.
Particularly for a lot of us that are maybe not living in our home county. Some people are not even living in their home country.
Yeah.
But a lot of us are dispersed around the country. Not everybody lives in their home county.
No.
Like in my family unit, I have siblings. We're in different places.
Yeah.
So Christmas 2020 doesn't look like the family in the one room together right now.
No. I mean, my dad has just turned 80 and he's in Spain. I'm going to get upset even thinking about him. But he, you know, he'd usually come back to Ireland a few times a year, and obviously he can't leave now, and he's just turned 80. We missed his party back in April. But it's just, you know, he would have come during the summer. He would have seen my daughter in her show, because she does a musical show, and then we would have seen each other Christmas, and he would have been home for the panto. And, you know, a lot of our kind of... And that's just my situation, you know, and I have siblings living around in different countries similar to you, you know, and it's really what words of comfort, like, I suppose you've survived up to now. And I know we've all survived in different ways. But, you know, I guess, like I'm thinking about Halloween and I'm thinking about Chris and I'm thinking like, we don't know now how things will be then. So, you know, to worry about that now is futile. probably a futile. It's kind of a waste because we don't know. You know, all we know is that things change and we don't know what things will be like then.
But as you said, we're wired as humans to think to the future.
To the future, absolutely. And
to plan.
Yeah.
And organise and get our hopes up. I suppose like in the summer we were kind of thinking, you know, families reuniting, Christmas.
I know.
And
I'm showing myself kindness for like, you know, missing my dad and I'm WhatsApping him and saying, I'm going to miss you. And, you know, I hope to see you as soon as we can. And, you know, like just to, you know, to give yourself a big hug for that, you know, that it is hard. You're not going to be alone in that situation. You know, we're all going to be struggling in certain ways. But hopefully with the strength that we've managed to kind of show and, you know, that gut instinct and that ability to kind of, you know,
be resilient.
Yeah. To just get back up again. That will be the case again at Halloween. We'll manage it. Christmas we'll manage. But it is really hard. Yes, it's hard.
Yeah. And it's important to just acknowledge that.
Yeah.
One last thing before we go to the questions. I wanted to talk about routine and the importance of having a good, I suppose, self-care routine. That even if you don't have one now, it is never too late to start putting small little steps in place to make you feel better. Like for me, simple things like I now have committed to drink. Sounds so simple. And to some people, it probably is a bit like, okay, you're making a big deal out of drinking water. But like for me,
you have water here, by the way.
Yeah, and I haven't touched it. But I'm committing now, before I have my cup of coffee, that I drink 2 big glasses of water. Mm-hmm. I think I'm a great person altogether. But it is just simple things because it kind of boosts my self-esteem or my feelings of self-worth that I'm looking after myself, that I'm doing a small little thing. And I've got into the habit of it now. So that's just what I do. I wake up in the morning and I throw 2 big glasses of water into me and then I enjoy my coffee. I feel better.
Yeah.
So the point I'm trying to make is it is important to start implementing healthy, small little steps that create a new routine, because most of our lives have changed in one way or another. A lot of us are not commuting to work, so we have perhaps more time or less time depending. But it is important, isn't it, to have routines?
It is. I mean, humans thrive on routine. Kids thrive on routine. That's why I think it was so hard during when they weren't in school and that. But so do adults. And it is important to have those little, you know, if you're not getting up to get showered to go to work, well, still get up, get showered and maybe have it in your mind of when you will be starting work at home. And if you feel that you'd feel better after going for a quick walk, if that's possible, you drop the kids to school, you're able to do, you know, I drop the kids a little bit further from school now so that we can all walk in a little bit because they don't want us in the building anywhere or outside the building. So just small little things that you can do when I come home from work, because I'm still going into a primary care centre every day. Rather than go straight into the house, because I know I'll feel overwhelmed if I've got the kids straight in, you know, like mommy, 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 you know, I just park the car near the house. I put on my runners and I go for a quick 5-minute lap because I just, for my head, I need it because I don't know when that is the next time I'll get that opportunity. So just, you know, small little things, you know, obviously if you eat better, you're going to feel better. Sleep, you've had somebody on about sleep and that's really important, you know, to kind of look at. So it's maybe like in my book, I talk about the lotus of self-care. I love the idea of the lotus, which, you know, it has the muddy bottom to it, but then it's got a jewel inside of it, which is like this fusion of our wisdom and then daily practices. So it's kind of like it is important to try to prioritize or to look at what are the things each day that I can do for myself. And then I kind of divided it into like the 5 leaves were like physical self-care, social self-care, emotional, psychological, spiritual. And then kind of looking at each area and going, what am I already doing for each of those areas? What would I like to do? And what help do I need to do it? So you mightn't be, you might love going for a walk, but you mightn't be able to do that because you can't physically do it because you've kids at home all the time or you don't have, or whatever. So it's about kind of figuring out what maybe needs to change? What support might you need around you to make that happen?
And that's something you could probably easily do, get a piece of paper and either like draw out the symbol of the lotus or a circle or whatever works for you.
Yeah, I have one here actually, yeah. So I have a lotus of self-care, and I do this, like I'm doing a lecture tomorrow night with the Recovery College in Galway, which is for people with mental health issues. And we're looking at, in a very practical way, how they can help with their self-care. So people who are, you know, who have significant mental health issues and what can help them on a daily basis. But that can help anybody, anybody out there at all.
So maybe the night before, you know, write down some small, simple things. They don't have to be huge, because the last thing we want to add to the mix is overwhelm. A lot of people are already feeling quite overwhelmed in the situation they find themselves in. But what small thing can I do tomorrow? Can I, you know, up the veg intake, get outside, go for whatever it is? And it might just help. It certainly does help me.
Yeah.
So and it's, you're saying the same. So it might just be the little thing that you can just add in, the little tool that can help you feel a bit better in this strange time.
And that's where we're going to leave the conversation for now. In the next episode, we'll delve into your questions, which cover topics like grief, uncertainty, loneliness, family dynamics, and lots more. As always, I love to hear your feedback. So if you can, take a minute to rate this podcast, leave a little comment. I promise it only takes a minute, and hit subscribe. I'd be so grateful. Thank you, as always, for listening to Ready to Be Real Conversations.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.